of mine for personal reasons. Generally, when we study something incessantly, it's because of a self-serving mode initially. And then once we realize what the benefits are of that mode, we want to share that enthusiasm with other people. And this is something I studied for many years before I determined how to optimize my own hormones. Because where I'm at right now is I'm 35 going on 36, and my hormone optimization, my personal hormone levels are great. My testosterone, my DHEA, cortisol, estrogen levels, everything is really optimal growth hormone. And it took a while to get to this point. And what I really have to convey to the reader is that there's no one person that's necessarily going to be able to get you to that point, because no one's going to care more about optimizing your own hormones or your health than you. At least no one should. You know, you can't expect a doctor to be sitting around all night thinking about how to optimize your hormones when he or she has 300 other clients that want the same thing. So the point here is definitely consult with experts, definitely educate yourself, but at the end of the day, you're going to have to take responsibility for optimizing your own hormones. And what worked for me to really get to where I'm at is not necessarily what's going to work for everybody else. There's a level of personalization. But what we're going to do with this call is I'm going to talk about how I got into it and how I got from where I was to where I am now, and then I'm going to go over a lot of really good general advice that takes care of 80% or more of the overall picture, and then I'll basically show people avenues of where to go to personalize it further, and that's either working with me or going through the same research that I did or working with a doctor in your area. There's many different ways to address this. What makes my approach different to hormone optimization than, let's say, going to a doctor is I'm not coming from the angle of hormone replacement. In other words, if I have a client and their hormones are in decline, I don't tell them to go to their doctor and get on a hormone replacement. I get to the bottom of why their hormones are not optimal in the first place, and there's a lot of reasons for that. The number one reason, though, by far, why your hormones are not optimal is lack of stress management skills. And let me just reiterate, when I mean not too much stress, but your ability to handle whatever stress you have in your life. And that's all a very subjective thing. What one person calls intense stress is a joke to another person, and vice versa. So it's not about lowering stress per se. You do want to do that as well, and I'll talk about that, but your ability to handle that stress is what's important. We're always going to have stress in our life. We're always going to have to learn how to cope with it. So trying to get rid of all the stress in your life is not the solution. In fact, that's even counterproductive. But let me backtrack here and just convey a personal story. You know, I got into the field of hormone optimization from a research standpoint in 2002. And real quick, that's exactly what I am with hormones. I'm a researcher. I research this stuff all the time. This year, I've devoted a large chunk of it to researching this stuff. So I'm not a doctor that's going to give medical advice. I'm not a naturopath that's going to give you herbal advice. I'm a guy who's a researcher who understands this field very well. I'm going to tell you how I helped myself personally and then what I do with people. So back in 2002, I was starting my fitness business, and I was under a lot of stress at the time. I was going through some personal life stress. I was going through some emotional health stress. I was going through financial stress and just the stress of trying to build a business. You know, I was one of the first guys to really build a kettlebell business in the U.S., so I didn't really have a role model to look at to say, cool, I'm just going to follow his plan. It was completely uncharted territory. So there was a lot of unknowns in that regard, and that's both exciting, but it's also very stressful, especially when you live in Santa Monica and you have high rent and high expenses. So anyway, I was able to stay on top of this stress for quite a while, at least a year. And what I mean by that is the stress was actually very energizing. Stress increases a hormone called cortisol, which actually increases your energy a great deal. It's a fight or flight mechanism. So you're basically on an adrenaline rush all the time. So you're really amped up. Even though you're not sleeping well, even though you're under a lot of stress, you just feel really empowered and amped up, ready to go. And this is a survival mechanism that everybody has. This is how you adapt to a very stressful situation and survive. But what happens is when this stress is high for too long, there's an inevitable crash. And I crashed really, really hard in late 2002. The accumulation of all the stress and my lack of stress management skills resulted in a really bad case of pneumonia. And what happened with this pneumonia is one of my lungs completely filled up with bacteria, and then another lung started filling up a great deal. And this all peaked right before I was going to Africa, my parents were living in Uganda. They were, my dad works for the UN, so I was going out there to visit them for Christmas. And this whole thing reached a peak intensity before I made that plane trip. Now, this is a 22-hour flight in total. It's 12 hours to the UK, or around 10 hours to the UK, and then another 12 hours to Uganda. So I'm flying with one lung functioning, even less than one lung functioning. And basically, by the time I got to Uganda, I had to be rushed to a hospital. They stuck a tube in my back, and they pulled out 40 liters of this really nasty bacteria from my lung. The next day, I went back, and they pulled another 20 liters. And immediately, I started feeling better. But the point is, this is where stress will take you in an extreme way if you don't manage it. And some people are probably listening going, well, that was really stupid to get on that flight. What were you thinking? And that's all true. No doubt it's stupid. And that's my whole point here, is that many people think they can just handle all of this stress and they never bother going to a doctor. I mean, forget about going to a doctor or a hospital. You shouldn't even let yourself get to this point. But if you do get to this point, you definitely want to get treated and not feel that it's just a cold or a flu that you're going to get over. But this is where stress will take you when not addressed. And it happens slowly for most people. I mean, there is extreme stress like a car accident or something along those lines, right? But for a lot of us, stress is something that just creeps up on us slowly, kind of like gaining fat each year. You gain a couple pounds one year, a couple pounds the next year. 6 years later, you're 40 pounds overweight. That's generally how it happens. And stress is the same way. So we don't want to just wait for our body to break down. We don't want to just wait for our car to break down. If we're smart, we do maintenance ahead of time, and we stay ahead of any potential breakdowns. And we got to treat our body the same way. So it all comes back to stress management. Now, when I was recovering from this breakdown, it was a pretty long recovery because I lost 30 pounds of muscle during this time frame, and I really had to build back slowly. So it just kind of shows you the illusion of strength as well. You can be really strong and healthy today. Next week, you could have pneumonia, and bam, you could lose a lot of it just like that. So we're much more fragile than we like to think about. And that's one thing we have to do is keep a very brutal self-inventory of who we are and where we're at in life so we stay ahead of these type of things. But I was really at a low at that point. You know, I come back from Uganda. I am recovered. That's the good news. But I've lost 30 pounds of muscle. I have $7 left in my bank account. And the way I looked at it is I can't go much lower than right now. That's the good news. I mean, you always can. But my mental state of mind was I'm not going to go much lower than this. So it's all up from here. But not only am I going to build my business, I'm fully committed now. You know, when you go through a life and death situation, it often changes your mentality and you become very committed to taking charge of your life and living fully rather than just living in a mediocre way, coasting through life as many of us do. So I came back fully empowered and fully ready to take charge. I got all my strength back. I got my size back. I really started looking at why this happened in the first place and how to avoid it from happening again. And that's when I realized that I need to learn more about my endocrinology, because otherwise it's all just how you feel, and we can't just go by that. That's important, but we need science to really back up how we feel and move us in the right direction. So when I got some blood work done, it wasn't totally bad. My testosterone was lower than it should be for a person my age. It wasn't low, but it wasn't ideal. You know, DHEA levels were pretty low, and that was an important indicator right there. DHEA was low. Cortisol wasn't that bad. Growth hormone was pretty low. So many people would look at this, including the doctor that I went to, and he's like, you know, your stuff is not that bad here. Your testosterone is pretty good for your age. Growth hormone's a little bit low. Didn't really say much about DHEA. Didn't really say much about cortisol. And once I delved into this stuff a little bit further, I realized that optimal DHEA levels are even more important than optimal testosterone levels. And optimal cortisol is definitely more important, because if you don't have optimal DHEA levels, you're not going to have optimal testosterone levels unless you're taking testosterone replacement, but you're still missing the big picture of hormone optimization. And where I'm going with this is that hormone optimization is not about one hormone. It's not about getting your testosterone levels through the roof for men. It's not about getting your estrogen levels in the right range for women. That's one component of it. There's a big variety of hormones that we need to optimize in the body. And we have to look at who the major players are and optimize those with the most focus, rather than getting focused on the ones that are more sexy and seductive. I mean, every man wants to have optimal testosterone levels. Every man wants to think his testosterone levels are great. That's generally what we think about when we hear the word hormone optimization. If you know a little bit more about hormones, you may say, okay, I want my growth hormone optimized as well. But if you talk about DHEA in the fitness community, you're basically going to get a lot of, oh, yeah, DHEA supplementation, that never did anything. It was supposed to increase testosterone. It didn't. It was supposed to help us lose fat. It didn't. It was just one of those snake oil products that didn't do anything for anybody. And they're completely missing the point that DHEA is a protective hormone for testosterone. So when your DHEAs are low, DHEA converts into testosterone, so it's a couple of metabolic steps away. And when you're under a lot of stress, your DHEA levels go down. So when your DHEA levels go really down, you no longer have a protective hormone for testosterone. So your testosterone can go down very easily. When cortisol goes up, DHEA is going to go up to help block your testosterone from going down. But if your DHEA is low, now there's nothing to protect your testosterone. All right, so you don't have to get overwhelmed when you're hearing this stuff, listeners. What you can actually benefit from the information that I'm going to provide without necessarily understanding this stuff in the detail that I do. But it's to your benefit to definitely have an understanding of what the big picture is. And that's what I focus on. I'm not going to bombard you with 50 different supplements to take for each hormone. I'm not going to tell you about hormone replacements. You know, that's an avenue for you to discuss with your doctor. It's not for me to tell you whether that's a fit for you or not. What I focus on is the big picture. And what I learned from all of that pneumonia was that stress management is the big picture. Because there have been studies that have been done on people in Italy, for example. There's some small towns there where they're not even on the ideal diet. They have a lot of lard, a lot of butter, you know, a lot of saturated fats. These people just eat whatever they want for the most part. But they have a very strong communal support. So in other words, if one person has a problem, the whole town takes that on as their problem, and they come to that person's rescue to really help them out. So you're never really someone that's alone with your problems. The community gets behind you. As a result, these people are very, very healthy by any measure of health. Their blood pressure is healthy. Their cholesterol levels are healthy. Their sense of well-being is high. They're not depression rates are extremely low, if even existent, because their stress management skills are good. Their support systems are very strong. So you can have the best diet in the world. You can have the best workout regimen of all time. You can have all the money you want, but you can still be under a lot of stress and, more importantly, have very low stress management skills. And it doesn't matter what you do right. If you don't manage stress well, you're not going to have an optimal hormone environment. And you basically are your hormones. Who you are, your personality, how you react to things is largely dependent on your hormones. For example, there have been studies that show that men who have higher DHEA levels are generally more courageous and take charge than men who don't. Men who have higher testosterone levels always have higher sex drives than men who don't, the desire to procreate. The book Think and Grow Rich has a whole chapter on how most men that are very successful, and actually not even most, it basically said that all men that are successful have one common thread. They all have a very high sex drive. And you're not going to have a high sex drive, men, if you don't have optimal testosterone and if you don't have an optimal levels of a neurohormone called dopamine. And you're not going to have optimal testosterone if you don't have optimal DHEA. And that's not going to happen if you don't manage stress well, because stress is what depletes your DHEA and gets your cortisol through the roof. So it's all much more complicated than just analyzing one thing. The good news is this. It's complicated. The answers are not completely simple when we really get down to the nitty-gritty. But in terms of addressing the majority of the issue, that can be done without taking supplements, without taking hormone replacements, without getting on a bunch of drugs. That is done by, number one, managing stress. Number two, eating a clean diet, and I'll talk about that next. And number three, spending an equal time on intense exercise, which I like to call adrenaline-focused exercise, as you do on restoration exercise, which is basically what helps you deal with the inflammation process that was created from the intense exercise. We need the intense exercise to build muscle mass, because the more muscle mass you have, the less estrogen receptors you have, and the better your hormonal environment is going to be. And this goes for women, too, because women, you want to have good estrogen levels, but you don't want to be completely estrogen dominant. That's when you start having a lot of issues such as fat retention and just moodiness and even leads to cancers. So it's not about becoming dominant in a hormone. It's about that balance, and there's a specific balance for each person. So what my levels are is what's good for me. It's not necessarily what's best for every single man on the planet. And that's where this stuff becomes more complicated, where you really need to take charge and go by how you feel to a degree. Because there are people, like men, who take high levels of testosterone replacement, and they have all this testosterone circulating around their blood, but their receptors are not picking up any of it, and as a result, they're not putting on muscle, they're not getting a higher sex drive, they're not feeling better, and they automatically think, this stuff just doesn't work. And what's happening is they have too many hormone disruptors coming in their body where they can't even benefit from an exogenous source of hormones. And this is why hormone replacement in and of itself is not the answer. That may be a good option for some people, especially as you get older, but it's only going to work if you have the other stuff addressed, such as a good diet, good restoration, good stress management skills. So I'll just pause right there for a second. And Ryan, let's see if you have any questions or if you think some of the questions that the reader or the listener sent in have not been addressed so far, we can shoot some of those out. Otherwise, I'll just go right into nutrition information.
Clint Clark, he has actually, I mean, pretty much already answered this. First of all, he says thanks for offering the free seminar. But he had three individual questions. The first one is there one king hormone that provides the most noticeable change in regards to optimum health? And I think
There is, and that hormone is insulin, so I'll talk about that. But let's get to the other two questions first, just to see if they're interrelated, and then I can see if I can address all three at once.
All right. The second one is, what is the foundation for a balanced hormonal profile? The first thing that someone should do when looking at the options, be it sleep, nutrition, exercise, recovery, supplements. And his last question is, are there any reputable economic mail order lab services for having hormone levels checked?
Okay. Yeah, I'll give quick answers to each one, and then I'll go back into depth. So, I mean, is there one hormone that's very important to optimize? If you only had to focus on one hormone, it would be optimizing insulin. So I'll talk about that in a second. In terms of a good mail order option for checking your hormones, there's a good saliva test, which is non-invasive. It's kind of a nuisance. You have to fill up a small tube with your saliva, but you send it into a lab, and then they send you the results, and you don't have to get your doctor approval to do this. So, I mean, so this is something you can do on your own as often as you want to. Often when you get blood work done, you have to go through your doctor, and they have to approve it. A lot of times they don't approve it for whatever reason. I don't understand why they wouldn't approve it, but they do. So it can be kind of a nuisance. You have to make an appointment, this and that, and so forth. So the saliva test is not a bad option. Also, what's cool about saliva testing is that it tells you what your free levels of the hormones are, and free meaning how much you actually have use of, how much hormone you're producing that you actually can utilize. The blood test, you generally looks at total levels. You can get free levels done too, but generally it looks at total levels. And that basically tells you the total production that's in your bloodstream, but it doesn't necessarily tell you how much you actually can utilize. So not only is saliva test potentially more useful, it's generally a lot cheaper and it's less invasive. It's less cumbersome. You don't have to go to a doctor. You can do it on your own as often as you want, and it's not that expensive. I think it may be $100 to get a full panel. So that's definitely a good option. And the other questions in terms about what's the first place to start, you know, supplements are definitely lower on the list. People that put supplements at the top of the list are either people that are selling the supplements or people that don't want to think about this stuff. They just want to take a couple of pills and then get back to their life. And supplements definitely have a benefit when a need has been addressed, but it's not the first line of defense. It's something that can enhance an overall program, but not the first place you want to go to. Exercise also is supplementary, given that it's definitely important. Don't get me wrong. Building muscle is definitely important. Doing some cardio is definitely important for your heart. Doing restoration exercise is definitely important. But again, it all goes back to what I said about stress management, and that starts in your brain. You can be a workout machine and be someone who worries about everything else in your life. So just because you're good at working out doesn't mean that your stress management skills are necessarily improved. Even though you're good at coping with the stress of working out, there's a multitude of stresses, and we have to be good at all of them rather than trying to avoid them. Also, what happens to a lot of people who love working out, they often use working out as a coping mechanism. In other words, their job sucks, they're in a relationship that's terrible, and they hate life, but they feel good when they work out. So they just want to work out as often as possible, and they focus all their attention there instead of the big picture of what can I do to change my life for the better. Because hormone optimization ultimately is about life optimization. If your life is not where you want it to be, it's going to be very difficult for your hormones to be where you want it to be. Because when you're not living the life you want, it's stressful. And it may not be a stress that is dramatic, like pain, like getting kicked in the face, but it's a stress that's underlying and there in your subconscious all of the time, just eating away at you. So stress management is definitely the number one thing to focus on. Insulin is the most important hormone to address, and here's why. And I'll use this to parlay into the nutrition section. All right, so let's talk about nutrition now. We've talked about the importance of stress. You know, the ways to really manage stress is to start with your mind, give yourself a self-inventory, think about why things stress you out the way they do, think about how you can cope with it. If you need therapy to deal with emotional problems, get it sooner than later, because that's also very important. And a lot of us are just walking time bombs with emotional problems, and stuff's going to come out at some point. So you're better off taking charge of when it does come out rather than just reacting to it when it does. And I can tell you that from personal experience. Address those emotional problems before they become bombs that explode in your life. But with diet, insulin and leptin and glucagon are the three important hormones. And it's really the insulin-glucagon axis that's very important. Insulin is a hormone that we need for survival. It's what feeds our cells. It's what gets nutrients around the body to various organs. So insulin is produced in the pancreas. And what happens is when we eat a lot of carbohydrates, our glucose levels go way up, especially if we're eating a lot of sugar. So insulin's job is to bring those glucose levels down into a healthy range and basically act as a glucose disposal agent. It'll put the glucose where it needs it. So if your brain needs glucose, it'll send it there. That's the first place it's going to send it to. If your muscles need it, and let me emphasize the word need, your body is going to send the glucose there. If your body doesn't need it, though, let's say you're already your muscles are full from the last meal. If your body doesn't need it, it's only going to go to one place after it's done all the necessary jobs, and that is stored as fat. And the more you produce insulin, which happens from eating too frequently, the more your receptors become weary and tired of picking up the insulin. And this leads to a problem called insulin resistance, which is basically what type 2 diabetes is. It's not that your body is not producing enough insulin to bring glucose down. It's that your body is overproducing insulin to pass the threshold for your receptors. Your receptors are not picking up on a small amount of insulin, so now your body has to overproduce it in order for your receptors to pick it up and do what needs to be done. So the way to keep insulin in the right range is to always have a balance of protein, fat, and carbohydrates at every meal. See, insulin's job is to lower glucose. So we definitely need carbohydrates for glucose because our brain uses glucose for fuel. So low-carbohydrate diets, you can survive without carbohydrates, but you're not going to survive well. And maybe there'll be people who say, no, I've been on a low-carb for this many years, I'm doing great, fine. You're the exception to the rule, though. Most people are going to get on a low-carbohydrate diet within 6 months or less. They're going to go crazy without the carbohydrates. They're going to eat a whole cake, and then their body's going to store all of that as fat. And you're going to end up getting fatter than you were before you did it. So low-carb is an extreme measure. Anytime you hear low or high, this is good advice. I forget where I heard it from, but the person basically said, whenever you hear the word low or high associated with the diet, you want to stay away from that. The one diet, and I don't agree with it completely, but it makes a lot more sense than most, is Barry Sears' zone diet, where you have a balance of protein, fat, and carbs at every single meal. And I'll take it one step further to say the kind of protein, fat, and carbs you have at each meal is also very important. But that balance is a good rule of thumb. And he recommends 30% protein, 40% carbs, 30% fat. Okay, you don't have to be that adamant or meticulous about it. Just look at a plate every time you eat and ask yourself, is there protein here? Is there carbohydrates here? is there fat here, and is there some balance to it, or is this a high-carb meal? Is this a high-protein but low-carb meal? If you think of high or low when you're looking at the meal, then it's not balanced, and you want to balance it out more. The reason why it's important to eat balanced nutrition, okay, is because the carbohydrates, glucose goes way up, insulin brings it down. Now, if there isn't something else to balance the insulin, insulin may bring it down too low. So now your glucose plummets, and you're going to crave more sugar to get it back up again, and it becomes this vicious cycle. You eat a candy bar, glucose goes through the roof, a mass amount of insulin is produced to deal with it, brings the glucose really far down. The problem is the bar has produced so much insulin that so much insulin has been produced and has brought down the glucose levels dramatically. Now you have low blood sugar and you're going to crave another candy bar, and you're just stuck on this vicious cycle all day long. So protein helps balance the carbohydrates out. Protein produces a hormone called glucagon. And the job with glucagon is actually to raise blood sugar. So if you only eat protein, what happens is your blood sugar goes way up, and because you don't have carbohydrates producing insulin to bring it back down to the middle, your body uses cortisol, and it takes basically muscle tissue, turns it into glucose to bring it back down. This is why low carb is not a good way to go. So we need carbohydrates for the insulin. We need protein to balance out the insulin and the glucose, because protein produces glucagon. And then fat further helps balance the meal. Fat is also critical for hormone production. Many hormones use fat as their basis to produce. So the brain wants to create testosterone. It basically uses cholesterol, and then the cholesterol creates a hormone called pregnenolone, and then that cycles down eventually into testosterone. At least that's the ideal. It can cycle into estrogen too. So having that balance of protein, fat, and carbs at every meal is definitely important. It's not, but that doesn't mean that you can just have any protein, any fat, any carbs at any meal. What really is important here is to eat as much organic food as possible. Now, if you eat meat, which is the majority of people on the call, majority of people listening to this, you must eat organic meat, dairy, eggs. If you're not willing to eat organic meat and dairy, don't even email me any questions about hormone optimization. Don't even waste my time, because you are loading yourself with so many hormone disruptors from all the chemicals that are injected into these animals at factory farms that there's nothing I can do for you to help your hormone optimization. You're not even doing the minimum yourself. You don't even have enough self-respect to feed your body the optimal food. Don't expect me or anyone else to come in and save the day. Eat. And then you may, the counter to this is, oh, organic food is so expensive. Okay, that's a valid argument. But what you can do is just eat less, because less is more in this case. You know, a couple ounces of organic food is going to be much better than twice as much as non-organic, because your body has to, your liver has to filter out all the junk from the non-organic food. So you're just putting more metabolic stress on your body and increasing inflammation. This is critically important for animal-based products. For vegetables and fruits and so forth, organic is definitely ideal, but it's not as bad if it's not organic. But when it comes to meat, because of all the hormones that are pumped into these animals and the stress they're under during their short, miserable lives on factory farms, I mean, they're producing a lot of adrenaline and cortisol, and they're being injected with all kinds of chemical estrogens and hormones, that every time you eat meat that's not organic, you're loading up your body with hormone-disrupting chemicals. And hormone-disrupting means you could be a guy who takes testosterone replacement and gets no benefit, and it's not because the testosterone replacement doesn't work. It's because you've loaded up your body with so many hormone-disrupting chemicals that the receptors can't even pick up on the testosterone. So if you eat meat, again, it has to be organic. Develop a relationship, ideally, with a local farmer. Go to a farmer's market and try to make it cost-productive as possible, but you got to get your meat organic. Also, when you eat, and let's say you have a plate, one-fourth, if you're going to eat meat, one-fourth can be meat, three-fourths should be vegetables. Green vegetables, red vegetables, yellow vegetables. You want to have what Dr. Eric Braverman calls a rainbow diet, where you have a variety of vegetables, not just one, so you get a variety of nutrients and antioxidants and so forth. Broccoli and cauliflower in particular have a lot of nutrients that help flush out estrogens, bad estrogens, chemical estrogens, you name it. So if you are going to eat, you definitely want to eat, if you're eating meat that's organic, you still want to eat a lot of vegetables to balance everything out. But if you're going to not take my advice and go on your life to keep on eating organic meat, at least eat all those vegetables that I just mentioned to help flush out the toxins that are coming through your body. I also recommend that people avoid dairy proteins for the most part, unless that's organic. Raw organic milk definitely has some benefits, but most of the protein powders are not raw, or they're certainly not organic. They're basically want to make it as cheap as possible and sell it as high as possible. And if you have an allergy to dairy, which a lot of people do, and it can be an allergy that's subtle, so it's not necessarily something you notice when you're consuming it, that creates an inflammatory response. And anytime you're getting an inflammatory response from your diet, that's energy that's wasted in your body to address that rather than going to building up your body and creating an optimal hormone environment. So organic is very important. All carbohydrates should come from low glycemic sources. So the only carbohydrates that you ever need in your diet are fruits and vegetables. That's it. No bread, no pasta, no quinoa, no oatmeal, none of that stuff. Fruits and vegetables, berries, apples, all of the fruits are great. Some say, well, what about bananas? That's high glycemic. Well, you know, eat banana in a protein shake, and now it's balanced out. So you don't have to worry too much about high glycemic, low glycemic with fruits, because fruits have a lot of fiber that even the ones that lean more towards high glycemic, they still have some fiber to balance that stuff out. They're still loaded with nutrients. It's not a refined sugar. And generally, if you follow the advice I just gave of having to balance at every meal, you're going to eat fruit within the context of a protein shake or maybe after a high protein meal rather than just eating fruit by itself. I don't think you should eat fruit by itself. It's not the end of the world if you do. But I think it's very important for the reasons already mentioned to have that balance of protein, fat, and carbs at every meal. But when you eat a lot of starches, eat a lot of potatoes, you eat a lot of bread, you eat a lot of pasta, I mean, this has a very powerful glucose response, much more so than fruits does, and your body has to create a lot of insulin to drive that stuff down, and the excess is always going to be stored as fat. Basically, prehistorically, we're made to be insulin-resistant animals because when we went through a famine centuries ago, we lived off of the fat that was stored from insulin production. So we're basically genetically made to be fat-storing machines. And any excuse you give your body to store fat, that's the first thing it's going to do when you eat. And so you basically have to be very cognizant of that and make sure you balance meals. Now, fats should come primarily from nuts, seeds, and healthy oils. Udo's Choice Oil is definitely my favorite essential fatty acid oil. I think it's great stuff. Lots of nuts and seeds are great power meals. They're loaded with plant sterols, which are hormone-supporting nutrients. They're not going to increase your hormone levels, but what they do is they give your hormone support. So let's say your body's testosterone levels are low. It can use some of those plant sterols like it would use testosterone. So it's a support system. So it's good to have a lot of nuts, seeds, almonds, all that stuff is great. You're not going to get fat off that stuff. People always have this fear of, if I eat fat foods, I'm going to get fat. And trust me, you're not going to get fats off nuts and seeds. It's a great fuel for your body. You're going to feel really good on it. And you may even find that you prefer using fat sources like nuts, seeds, Udo's oil as your main fuel source rather than carbohydrates. Me personally, I do really well on a good amount of fat in my diet. If I have a good amount of fat and protein and some low glycemic carbs before I work out, 2 hours before I work out, I'm locked and loaded. I'm ready to go. So don't go below 20% of total calories from fat. Make sure you get at least 20% of your calories from fat. You may find you do a lot better with more. You may find 30, 40, even 50% of your calories from fat, and you feel great. So that's an individual thing. Experiment with the different ratios, and when you find what makes you feel great, don't let someone else talk you out of it. You know, I've had people tell me, oh, you know, I think your fat intake is too high, but I'm leaner when I take more fat. My workouts are better. My skin's better. My sex drive's better. My mood is better. So I know what works for me to the point where I still do the research to keep learning more, but I figured out what works for me some time ago, and I don't really need anybody else to tell me what's going to work best for my body. I've taken enough self-inventory to figure it out. So to recap, organic food is critical, especially if you're eating meat. You want to have a balance of protein, fat, and carbs so you can balance that insulin and glucagen. And then you want to get all carbohydrates from fruits and vegetables. You want to focus on fat from nuts and seeds and almond butter, Udo's oil. Some fish oil may have a benefit, but it's generally hard to find a good source of fish oil because of the mercury and contaminants. So I wouldn't load up on fish oil or use it as your primary source of healthy fat. You may want to use it as a supplement to a degree, but the big picture when it comes to fat consumption should come from nut seeds, olive oil, flaxseed oil, Udo's oil. Flax seeds, grounded flax seeds are great for homemade protein bars or for putting in a protein shake. That's all really good stuff.
Awesome stuff. Actually, one of the questions that popped up is from Andrew Van Gilder. Hope I got his name right there. He actually asked, is taking the majority of calories at one time at night, like 3,000, optimal? I assume he's probably referring to like the warrior type diet.
He's referring to the warrior diet. Here's the thing about diet. You know, there's no one diet that works best for everybody. You know, a lot of trainers like to recommend the five to six small meals per day. That doesn't work for me. And the reason it doesn't work for me is I don't want to think about food that often. I don't want to think about food every 2 hours. I don't want to stop living my life and go, oh, time to eat again. And I don't like eating when I'm not hungry. And I'm not hungry that often. That's just not who I am. I'm not a big breakfast guy. I do like making dinner my main meal. So what I do personally is kind of a modified warrior diet. I do have breakfast, which is usually an hour after I get up, and it's a protein shake because protein shake is a great way to start your day because you load up with a lot of nutrients in a manner that's very easy to assimilate. It doesn't require a lot of digestion energy. If you have a big breakfast first thing in the morning, most of us are going to feel really tired after that because we're just trying to wake up and get our day going. So we want to start the day with something that's going to get us going in a way that's easy to assimilate. So if people look at my training journal on either my website or on Facebook, they can see what I have each morning. I really like rice protein. It's what I sell, but that's not the only reason I like it. I sell it because I use it, and I think it's a great product. And what I like about rice protein is that it doesn't have an inflammatory response. You're not going to develop an allergy to it. And a lot of doctors use rice protein when they put their clients on detox diets as a way to keep their protein up while they're cleansing. So I think rice protein is great stuff. I think the Sun Warrior, the one I sell, tastes pretty good. Not everyone agrees with me on that, but I think it tastes pretty good, and I have a lot of people that are repeat customers for that. And I think having a protein shake with some frozen fruits, put some Udo's oil in there, put some spices like ginger or cinnamon. You know, spices have a lot of benefits. They make stuff taste better, but they're also loaded with anti-inflammatory nutrients. They help us with our blood sugar, so they're going to help out insulin and glucose. And now you have – calling it a protein shake is not giving it enough credit. It's a power shake where you're just loading up your body with really good nutrients to get your day going. And I feel like $1 million after I have that protein shake. That gets me through the whole day. And then 2 hours before I work out, I'll have some homemade protein bars, which are made with almond butter and flaxseed powder and some pecans and some goji berries and some protein powder. And then I have recipes on that on my website and Facebook as well. And that's a really good balanced meal of protein and some good fats and some good carbohydrates. And I'll have that 2 hours before I work out, and I have a great workout every time, unless my sleep was terrible the night before. But assuming my sleep was good, which it is most nights these days, that's a great meal to fuel myself for a very vigorous workout. And then dinner is generally my main meal. So I do think that there are benefits for having dinner as a bigger meal than other meals because dinner is generally the time where we're winding down for the night and we're going to go into that relaxation stage. So enjoying a pretty big meal for dinner has a lot of benefits in terms of we're loading up on some calories and where the eating the bigger meal generally has a relaxing effect. I mean, we don't want to eat to the point of being bloated and having stomach upset, but we want to eat to the point where we feel really good and our appetite is all set, and now we can wind down for the evening. So I find that having dinner as my biggest meal helps and boost my serotonin levels and just makes me feel good and relaxed, and now I can wind down from kind of being more cortisol during the day, more adrenaline during the day, to just be more relaxed and ready to go to sleep. Now, the notion of a warrior diet where you eat nothing during the day and have 3,000 calories at once, that's not even the warrior diet. I mean, if you read Ori's book, I mean, the author of the book is a good friend of mine, Ori Hofmeckler. He's an extremely knowledgeable guy. I really like his anti-estrogenic diet book in particular. You know, for people who want to learn more about how to cleanse estrogens out of your body, that's a great book, and it's not an overly technical read or a long read. A lot of good advice in there. Ori recommends that people basically have small meals that are easy to assimilate during the day. So you may have some fruits in the morning. You may have some nuts and seeds in the afternoon. You may have a couple eggs in the late afternoon. And then dinner is your main meal where you basically eat as much as you want. That doesn't mean that you eat 3,000 calories. You don't force feed yourself. You may be content at 1,000 or 1,500 calories, but dinner is the main meal. And the benefits of this is that by staying light during the day, not only do you have more energy for the most part and you feel more active, you're not weighing yourself down with digestion energy, but you also keep insulin sensitive because every time you eat, there's an insulin response, especially if you're eating a lot of carbohydrates. And the more often you produce insulin, the worse your body gets at using it. The receptors don't pick up on it as easily. It's kind of like if you drink alcohol once a week, you don't have a big tolerance for it. But if you drink it every day, now you have a big tolerance for it, and you have to drink a lot more to get the buzz, to get drunk, whatever you're trying to do. Now, it's not something I'm recommending. I'm just using an analogy that most of us can probably relate to at some point in our life or another about tolerance and resistance and so forth. So here's the thing. You don't want to eat more than three meals a day, all right? So if you have breakfast, try to, especially for fat loss. I mean, if you're trying to gain weight, the rules are somewhat different. But if we're talking about fat loss here, we want to optimize a hormone called leptin as well. Leptin is basically what tells you when your gas tank is full. So insulin loads you up with all the fuel you need when you eat. And if you don't have optimal leptin levels to tell you when to shut insulin off, then insulin may just keep going, and you may just keep on eating. And what's interesting is a lot of people that are overweight have really high levels of leptin, which doesn't make sense at first. You're like, well, how can they be fat if their leptin levels are so high? And what's going on is their leptin levels are through the roof, but their receptors are picking up none of it. So they never really feel content. They can just keep on eating and eating and eating, and they're still hungry. They never get that signal from leptin to shut it off. And this is from years of overconsumption where leptin just starts becoming more and more and more less efficient. So the funny joke that I've heard some trainers say is, you know, what do I do about fat loss? Well, don't ever get fat in the first place, and you don't have to worry about it. And that's actually really good advice, but it's not advice that people that are fat want to hear because they have the problem now, and they can't go back in time and prevent from getting fat. So we have to look at where people are at now. And the benefits of eating three meals a day with 6 hours in between each meal, and there's a great book called The Leptin Diet where the author Brian Richards discusses why this is important, is that when you have long stretches in between each meal, you keep insulin sensitivity high. You keep leptin sensitivity high. You're not overproducing insulin and leptin to the point where your body is not very good at picking it up. When you're eating all the time, and most of us snack, you know, five meals a day is not just what bodybuilders and fitness people do. Most people eat more than that without even thinking about it. They're snacking in the car. They're eating junk food at the office. You know, so very few people are only eating three meals a day, if even that. Even people who say, oh, I only eat dinner, chances are they're eating something during the day. It may be a Frappuccino at Starbucks, all right, which is not just coffee anymore. It's loaded with sugar and other crap. So most people, very few people are just going through the whole day without eating anything, you know, just doing a water fast and then just eating a big meal. Most of us are eating sugar in various forms often, more than we think about it. I mean, we easily can just sit there and shove food in our face without even realizing we're doing it, without even thinking about it. So stretching out the time in between each meal, again, keeps insulin sensitivity high and keeps leptin sensitivity high. And those are both critical components of not only hormone optimization, but fat loss. If you have insulin resistance, you're gonna be fat at some point. That's inevitable. You know, that's basically type 2D of diabetes. Your body is overproducing insulin and is storing your calories as fat. And that's happening every time you eat. So every time you eat, you're basically a professional fat storage machine at this point. Leptin is not shutting it off, so you're overeating, and insulin is storing it all as fat. So we have to get good at discipline. We have to start feeding our body the best food possible, because that's what's going to clear out a lot of the hormone disruption that's causing insulin resistance and leptin resistance and testosterone resistance in the first place. That's why diet is critical. It's also why stress management is critical, because when you're overproducing cortisol, you know, cortisol competes for the same receptors as testosterone and DHEA and other hormones. So when your cortisol is through the roof all the time, your receptors can't even pick up on the good stuff like testosterone. And when you're under a lot of stress, you have to realize that the only thing your body's thinking about is survival. It's not thinking about procreation. You know, testosterone is essentially a procreation motivator. When your testosterone levels are high, you want to have sex. And the purpose of sex, biologically speaking, is procreation. When you're under a lot of stress, though, your body's thinking, forget about procreation. Let's get you through this time of your life. The problem is that time of your life is your life. It never ends. You're just going from one stress to the next. And your testosterone levels plummet, your sex drive is non-existent, you go to the doctor and tell him about it, he gives you some blue pills and sends you on your way. And that's not the solution. It's not even the solution in the short run. It's definitely not the solution in the long run. So we have to take charge of this a lot more, and we have to educate ourselves to the point where we really understand why things are happening. Our stress management skills are terrible. You know, Americans have more opportunities than anybody else in the world, yet our stress management skills are probably worse than anybody else. You know, I'll tell you a really dramatic story that drives this point home in a very compelling manner. You know, my father works for the United Nations. He works for the IMF, International Monetary Fund. So he's been all over the world. He's been to Africa many times as a consultant to talk about their economy and so forth. And he's met a lot of people in different countries like war-torn Rwanda, where we had this terrible genocide where 800,000 people were killed, with butchered to death with machetes in 90 days. It took place not long ago during the Clinton administration. Now, my father talked to a young lady that he met from Rwanda, and she was talking about how she's going to be – I think she was going to school in America, but she's going to be visiting her parents in Rwanda soon. And she made the point of saying that the chances of her getting raped on the way to visit her parents are really high. She says it basically happens every time she goes home. And she said it as if she were talking about a flat tire. So in her mind, getting raped is an inconvenience. Now, I'm not saying this is a good thing from any point. This is an extremely terrible situation. It's terrible that she's been raped so many times where she thinks it's an inconvenience. It's terrible that she thinks it's going to happen every time she goes home to visit her parents. And it's terrible that she doesn't think it's a big deal. But the point here is that her stress management skills are so high that to her it isn't a big deal. And you cannot look at anyone's problems the same after you hear a story like that. And I could get into a lot worse than that. I'm writing a book now called Live Life Aggressively, What Self-Help Gurus Don't Want You to Know. And I'm reading a book called The Lucifer Effect, How Good People Go Bad. And if you read this book, you're never going to look at human nature in the same way again. And you're never going to look at your everyday problems as the same way again. And if you do, then you're really good at deluding yourself. Your delusionary skills are incredible. You may not have good stress management skills, but you have incredible delusionary skills. So, I mean, so the point here is that it's not so much what happens to us in life. It's how we relate to it, how we deal with that. And that's why stress management is so important, because it causes an extremely negative hormonal cascade if we don't address it. I'll just pause there to see if there's other questions or if there's any other direction you want me to go in.
I love the direction of, like, that, actually, that, like, talking of attitude and how it seems that a lot of it stems just from, you know, poor choices that you make as far as, you know, with relationships and job choices, and maybe it all comes down to just doing what you hate doing every day.
It really does. Just to jump in real quick, it really does, Ryan, and for so many reasons, because a lot of times our diets are terrible because of emotional stress. It's not because we just love junk food. It's because we are so stressed emotionally from jobs we hate, from people that are mean-spirited to us and not working in our best interest, that food becomes medication now, and we want the quick pleasures of eating sugar, cakes, and so forth. I mean, you show me somebody who has a really bad diet, and I can 9 times out of 10, there's an underlying emotional issue there. I'm not a psychologist or a life coach, so, I mean, I don't get into this with people where I'm aggressively trying to find out what's going on in their life. But a lot of times this stuff comes out with my online clients, where they start remembering things that happened to them when they were kids, traumas. They start really thinking about what's going on in their life. And, you know, as they become more empowered from exercise and their diet and taking charge of their life, doing the careers they want, their tolerance for crap from other people starts going down dramatically, and they really start doing an incredible self-inventory on who they are and where they want to go. So, I mean, it really does start in your brain, and it starts with what you're willing to accept in your life. And it's like I said, if you have a job you hate, and you're in a relationship you can't stand and you're just a miserable person, you're not even really going to be motivated to eat well because you're just not a happy person. You're probably not even thinking about sex, having a healthy sex drive and all that stuff. You know, it only starts coming around when you get to that point where you're just fed up and you want to take charge of your life, no longer willing to accept the nonsense anymore.
But and one of the things that comes back to me, is, and actually how I stumbled upon your website when I first started reading your stuff, was your article, Hate Your Job, You're in a Dark Place.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been out there for a while, I know that. But I actually read that article when I was working for Lowe's Home Improvement Center. And I hated that job. And reading a lot of your stuff and just that whole, you know, the whole attitude of, okay, you got to take charge of your life and, you know, do what you want to do and just kind of make things happen. And when you do, everything just seems to kind of fall into place for the most part.
I mean, it's really true. It really takes care. I mean, we're always going to have problems in life. We're always going to have, you know, I'm doing what I love now, and I'm with a great woman. I'm married to a great woman, and I've got a great lifestyle here in Las Vegas. But that doesn't mean that I'm free of any stress or problems. It's just that the big ones, though, are not on the radar screen. My health is good. My relationships are great, and I'm doing what I would love with my business. So in other words, the three main stresses that a lot of people deal with are not my main stresses. Those are not my problems. I have other things I need to deal with. But, I mean, I think about world issues and world suffering a lot, and I'm reading books like what I just mentioned where, again, you're not going to take your problems as seriously after you read a book like that. You just can't. I mean, if you're willing to let that stuff in and really think about it, it just becomes a big joke after a while. But it's funny that you mentioned that article because I've had many people tell me the same thing. I had a guy come up to me at my friend Steve Cotter's kettlebell seminar. He came up to me and said, yeah, I read that article and I quit a job I hated. And he kind of paused after he said that. So I'm like, okay, now you're here to kill me. He's like, no, I went on to do what I wanted to do. I never really thought about it. It was kind of like the one more thing I needed to hear to push me over the edge. And unfortunately, we often get the wrong reinforcement. So in other words, sometimes you tell people that you want to make some big changes in your life, and they start telling you, no, that's not going to work. You got to be practical. You have a family to take care of. And these are all probably valid objections, but those are not excuses either. You know, I've had people who get very angry about some of the stuff I write as well, where they go, you know, it's easy for you to say, go do what you love. You don't have kids and responsibilities and this and that and so forth. It's like, you know what? That may all be true, but at the end of the day, that's just another excuse. It may be a legitimate excuse. It may be a big excuse. But if it wasn't that, it would be something else. As human beings, we're great at rationalizing anything we do, whether it's great or bad. So if it's not that, it's going to be something else. And at the same time, yeah, I don't have kids, and I didn't have kids when I started my business, and I don't have kids now. But there's plenty of people out there who made major things happen who were taking care of kids at the same time. So who cares what I have done or I haven't done? I'm not the only person in the world to use as an example. There's plenty of people out there that have made very impressive things happen with a lot more going on than just kids to take care of.
Yeah, by far. I mean, in most cases, it's actually, if they have kids, you think it would be more of a motivator for them to make things happen for a better environment.
People, it is. I think that's why people gravitate towards my newsletter, and a lot of people are excited about the book because, you know, what I'm trying, I'm not trying to break people down. I'm not trying to get people to feel inferior. I'm not trying to talk about how great I am. That's not the point. That's not the point of any of this. I'm not even saying I'm right on everything. The only thing I'm trying to do is provoke thought. I'm trying to get people to think about this stuff. I'm trying to get people to think about their lives and what they want out of it and what's important to them and who they are. And these are questions that a lot of us never ask ourselves. We're too busy watching 4 hours of crappy reality TV every night and eating Pizza Hut every Friday and drinking beers with our friends on Saturday and then having a barbecue on Sunday and then going back to our 9-to-5 job that we loathe and then taking sleeping pills at night because we can't get to bed from all the stress, that we never really stop and think, who am I? What's important to me? What do I want to do with my life? And these are really important questions to ask. I mean, what you do with your life career-wise takes up a big portion of your life. So if you're miserable there, you're going to be pretty miserable in general.
Totally, Jim. I mean, when I was at Lowe's, I hated it. Like, a lot of things went bad just from being there. And
yeah.
It's good to relate to other people that have actually, you know, read your article. And like, it was just, you know, The mental reassurance of, okay, there's other people out there that feel like that. If obviously he's writing an article about this.
Right.
And I mean, I believe that, like, mental attitude, you know, fortitude, I guess it would be.
Well, a lot of it is self-talk. I mean, we're giving our messages we're giving our brain messages all the time. My friend Richard Makowicz, who's a former Navy SEAL, he wrote a great book called Unleashing the Warrior Within. He has a whole section on the importance of self-talk, how we're always having conversations with ourselves. And eventually, you want to train yourself to have the right conversations with yourself. So, for example, you don't want to give in to temptation every time the conversation comes up in your head. You don't want to stick with the job you hate because you have conversations in your head saying you got to be practical and you got to do this. And, you know, the bottom line is this. When you talk about your job, if you're miserable about it or you don't even want to talk about it, that's a pretty bad sign right there. And I can just tell in your voice when you're talking about Lowe's that it wasn't a pleasant experience for you. You know, it wasn't excited about it all.
No, it was. I mean, and when I was there, it was always, what can I do to better this? But then you fall into that. I mean, I fell into the trap of, I made really, really good living at a young age working there. And
right.
I was there for almost 5 years, and just one day I walked in and quit. And, man,
yeah.
that was hard to explain to a lot of people on that one. But, I mean, ever since that day, I've never looked back, and it's been, you know, one of the best, you know, best things I've ever done, at least I think so for myself.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and that's a good lesson to learn in general. And you know, the listeners may think we're going on a tangent here, but this is actually an extremely important component of hormone optimization. This is how you deal with stress management. This is how you handle stress. Because if you have major stresses in your life, the goal is not to get better at handling those stresses if you can change them. You know, some things we can't change, so we have to learn how to manage it better. But doing a job we hate, most of the time we can change that. And a lot of people now will say, well, yeah, we're in a recession, we're this and that and so forth. Then, okay, fine, you're going to have to be more methodical maybe about how you do it. But that doesn't mean that there's always something you can do. All right, this guy, Viktor Frankl, who was a Holocaust survivor in the death camps out there, even he said, look, you know, we're treated like animals, we're locked up in cages, but the one thing you always have control over is how you think and how you feel about this. And you just have to find reasons every day to stay motivated, to stay strong. And that's all up to you. No matter what they do to break you, you have the control on how you're going to be, whether you're going to be broken or not. And he's talking about an extremely extreme event. So when you look at these extreme events, like what I talked about, Rwanda, where 800,000 people were butchered in 90 days, and you think about the Holocaust, and you think about some real intense suffering that happens in the world, even this economic recession we're in, yeah, it's tough on a lot of people, but it's not the same level at all. So, I mean, yes, we don't have to kid ourselves by saying it's not a problem. It is. But let's put it in the proper context and not blow it out of proportion and use it as an excuse not to better ourselves, because there's always something we can do to better ourselves. It doesn't mean quitting your job today. It means maybe spending more time on the side building up what you want to do, and start thinking about what you want to do and maybe start building up a side business to see how well you can do with it, and then at some point decide whether that's what you want to do and go full throttle. I mean, that's what a lot of people do. So, I mean, these are the important questions that really need to be asked, and hormone optimization all starts really with lifestyle optimization. And some people may counter that by saying, well, maybe if I get my hormones optimal first, I'll have more impetus to change things in my life. And that's a somewhat valid argument, but that may take a long time. That may take 2 years to get your hormone your hormone levels optimized. So you don't want to delay living well just because of that. You do the best in the situation you're in. You know, start optimizing your hormones now, but start looking at the big picture. Start looking at your relationships. Start looking at your friends. Start looking at your job. Start looking at these factors and go, are these good influences in my life? And I've had to cut off a lot of people throughout my life that were just not good. They're not necessarily bad people, but they weren't good influences on me at all. And a lot of what we do in life is situational, where we may be good people when the situation is great, but we keep putting ourselves in the wrong situations, it's going to have a negative impact on us in one shape or form or another, and we never want to take that lightly.
Definitely. This is going to kind of go back to another direction, but Liz from St. Louis just asked the question. She would love to hear about how to optimize hormones of females, specifically how to increase sex drive.
Okay. Right. Now, The female physiology is way more complex than the male physiology. So just right up front, my main focus has been on male hormone optimization. that's, I mean, for obvious reasons. I'm a male, and I had issues with hormones, and I spent a lot of time working with that. And when I started sharing these stories, a lot more men started contacting me with the same things, and I started helping them out with that. I am working with a lot more women these days, though. So I am learning a lot more about female physiology and hormone environment and so forth. Now, overall, the big picture, the same rules apply. So stress management is critical, and women have a tendency to take on a lot more than they deserve to take on and just suffer quietly. And this is less and less nowadays. You know, women are much more empowered in a lot of ways now than, let's say, 50 years ago. But a lot of women have a lot of underlying stress that a lot of men don't have, and it's not addressed. So, I mean, that's not for me to tell you what the stress is or for me to tell you whether you should be stressed about it or not. That's for you to decide. But at the same time, you want to address whatever stresses are going on in your life in a very proactive manner. So, again, the same rules apply with stress management. Diet is going to be the same rules as well. I find that many women don't do well on low carbohydrate. I don't think anyone does well ultimately on low carbohydrate. I mean, there's always exceptions. My friend Steve Maxwell has been on a low carb diet for years, and you know, he's a ripped machine. The guy's in his 50s, so obviously there's always exceptions. But women generally do not do well on the low carb. It just really messes up their endocrinology. So I think that zone diet is a good place to start. So first, start with stress management. Two, start with balanced meals at every meal. 30% protein, 40% carbs, 30% fat is a good place to start. And you're going to have to play around with those ratios to determine what's best for you. So try lowering the protein, upping the carbs a little bit. Maybe you want to up the fat, lower the carbs a little bit. Play around with that. But it's good to start with the balance and go from there. And then stretch out those meals, 4 to 6 hours in between each meal. And if you're not used to that, just work up to it over time. Exercise is very important. I definitely don't want to leave that out of this call. So let's talk about that a little bit. You want to do intense exercise with the focus of building muscle. And we don't want to mistake muscle for bulk. So a lot of women hear the word muscle. They're like, I don't want to look like a guy. I don't want to look like Schwarzenegger. They start panicking. And, you know, even a lot of guys say that. I don't want to get too big. And that's always a joke to those of us who have ever tried to get big. It's not easy. It's not something that happens by accident. You don't just work out hard for a couple of weeks and go, oh, man, I'm huge. I don't know how this happened, but I didn't want it to happen. You know, that's the kind of problem a lot of guys who are working out really hard would love to have. But you want to build muscle because, again, the more fat we have, the more estrogen receptors we have, and the more fat is being stored, then we're just putting ourselves not in the optimal environment for hormone optimization. Also, having a good amount of muscle tissue basically makes you a metabolic furnace. So, in other words, if you have a low body fat and a good amount of muscle tissue, you're basically burning fat all day long. While if you just do cardio, you may burn some calories while you're doing the cardio, and even burn some fat. But once you stop doing cardio, the benefits stop with it. So weight training gives you more bang for your buck. Weight training is like passive income. It keeps working when you're not working. So you want to focus on that as the focal point of your weight training. Kettlebell stuff is really good because it kind of gives you the best of both. It gives you the muscle building benefits, not huge muscle building benefits, but muscle building benefits where you're going to get leaner and harder. And also you can turn it into a great strength cardio component exercise where you're doing a lot of ballistic moves for time or you're doing a lot of sets. And now you're just creating an incredible cardio workout as well as building up some additional muscle mass and just basically fine-tuning your body to be a hormone optimization machine. Now, here's the problem with intense exercise. Intense exercise creates an inflammatory response. It actually increases cortisol levels because just psyching up for a heavy workout increases your adrenaline levels. So cortisol goes up and the inflammation goes up when you work out hard. Now, when people hear that, they're like, oh, well, maybe I should just do moderate exercise all the time. And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm going at because I do a lot of intense exercise. You got to do the intense exercise to build the muscle mass and to optimize insulin-like growth factor, which is where all the muscle-building benefits and fat-burning benefits from growth hormone come from. Also, IGF-1 competes for the same receptors as insulin. So every time insulin goes through the roof, you're storing fat. Every time growth hormone goes through the roof, you're burning fat like crazy, and you're building muscle tissue. This is why I don't recommend having a protein shake immediately after you work out with carbs, because all you're doing is spiking insulin, and you're losing the growth hormone that's just about to be created from the workout. Growth hormone goes up dramatically 15 to 30 minutes after you work out. But if you have a shake right after you work out loaded with sugar, forget about it. You just shut that off, and now you're producing a lot of insulin, which is just going to store body fat. So it's completely counterproductive. So that's why we want to do intense exercise. Now, the negatives are high cortisol, not necessarily high cortisol, but a cortisol boost and an inflammatory response. And if we don't balance this out with what I like to call restoration exercise, we're going to start overtraining ourselves, we're going to start having joint pain, and we're just going to start breaking our body down instead of building it up, and we're actually going to start sacrificing muscle and actually retaining fat from all the cortisol that's going on. It's going to be counterproductive for what we're trying to do. So my attitude is this. If you do 3 intense workouts per week, let's say Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you really hit it hard with some weight training. On Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, you want to do some long walks where you focus on deep breathing, and you're not trying to turn this walk into a workout. Just walk at a moderate pace. This is a great reason to have a dog to walk. You know, dogs will help you with lowering stress. Dogs are great companions. So go take your dog for a walk and do some deep breathing where you breathe in through the nose really deep, and then you hold it for a couple seconds, breathe out, and just enjoy it. Enjoy the thought process that comes up. Enjoy the fresh air and just get it done. This will help you with the cortisol and inflammatory response from the intense exercise. Now, if you want to take it one step further, do some yoga, do some qigong, do some Chai Chi, and I don't mean you have to do all three. Pick one of those and do some of that stuff. I think Qigong is excellent at lowering cortisol and lowering stress levels. I think it's an incredible stuff, and there's some good videotapes out there for you to check out and do a program a couple times a week. I think Steve Maxwell's joint mobility work is incredible. I think everybody should do that every morning to loosen up the body and get rid of all the stiffness and just get some mobilization going, get some healing nutrients circulating around your body. Do it after every workout. Do it even before your workout to lean out. I mean, not lean out, but to get ready for the workout. So remember, every time you do something that's adrenaline-based, you have to do something that's restorative. And this is not just training. If you have a very stressful day, like you're working your tail off and you're just getting a lot done at business and you're all amped up when you get home and you have a hard time relaxing, well, you need to have a relaxation routine to balance out all that adrenaline. You know, go sit in the hot tub for a half hour. Do a meditation, listen to a meditation CD like Holosync. It's one of my favorites. You just sit in a chair and listen to a meditation CD for an hour. You know, watch a movie like a comedy you really like, something that helps bring your energy down and just makes you relax and laugh and have a good time. But we really, as Americans, we're a very go, 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 go society. We're drinking coffee all day to get through the day. We're drinking Red Bull. We're eating a lot of sugar, and we're always focused on how do I do more rather than focusing on how to do it better and more efficiently and how to relax and be restorative. And then you got to get that sleep. You got to get 9 hours of deep quality sleep every night, and that's what I get every night. I feel like $1 million, and because of the lifestyle I've created, I can actually do that. One more reason not to do a job you hate. But if you're in a situation where you really do have a lot going on, no less than 7 hours of deep sleep. And I don't mean 7 hours of tossing and turning. I mean 7 hours where you're knocked out and you're having deep, vivid dreams. That's a sign of really restoring. So, I mean, all of these things, the rules are the same for men and women when we're looking at a top-level approach. When we're looking at how to optimize one hormone here and there, now it becomes more complicated. But my attitude is always this. Focus on the big picture first and do that for 6 months. See where that takes you. Now, if you still feel that you're not at your best, you may want to consult with a doctor. You may want to see if hormone replacement is the right avenue for you. You may want to look into herbs that increase estrogen or whatever you're deficient in. But take care of the big picture first, which is number one, stress management, optimizing your lifestyle, surrounding yourself with really good support systems, good people, doing a good amount of intense exercise, balancing out the intense exercise with restorative exercise, getting a lot of rest every night, finding opportunities to enjoy life. We're social animals, so it's important for us to interact with other people. We just have to be very careful who we interact with, because the right people can make us much better, and the wrong people can, at best, prevent us from improving, and at worst, turn us into something we never thought we were capable of. And I say this with pure, serious nature. I mean, if you read this book I'm working on, and when you read the chapter in my book, that's going to be based on some of the research I'm doing, which will be on my website, you know, that'll definitely get you thinking.
Awesome. Unless you have anything else you want to talk about, Mike, we can go ahead and end it there.
Okay. Yeah, sounds great. Okay. And I'll say I have a video on my website called Collision Course, and it's a video loaded with kettlebells and strongman training and battling ropes and body weight training, joint mobility. So it's a pretty comprehensive product. But it also has a lecture on hormone optimization by me. And it also comes with an ebook on optimizing hormones, which gets more into the technical side of stuff than what we were getting through on the phone call here. And that ebook is also available if you I sell a supplement on my website called Quadricarn, which is a product that helps with insulin resistance and androgen receptor uptake. And if you buy one bottle of that, you get the ebook for free. Now, I want to emphasize real quick, though, that, yes, this is a good supplement, but don't buy the supplement thinking that it's the answer to all your woes. You got to do everything else I mentioned on the phone call. If you're not willing to do what, all the other stuff I mentioned, I don't want your business. Don't bother buying it because you're not going to benefit from it and you're going to be disgruntled and I don't want that. You don't want that. Okay, so that's going on. That's one thing. Also, I'm doing a series of courses in the fall. I'm going to be doing a seminar in New York City in October, and I'm doing one in Los Angeles in October, and the exact dates are on my website, mikemahler.com. This is going to be a kettlebell-focused course with an all-star lineup of great people, Steve Cotter, Kim Blackburn, Jason Dolby, Andrew Derniat. These are all the best guys in the business. They're all going to be teaching at the course. Me, as I'm often well known as a kettlebell instructor, I'm actually not going to be teaching kettlebells myself at this course. I'm going to be doing a three-hour presentation on hormone optimization. It's going to be 1 hour each day. It's a three-day course where I'm really going to get into detail about some of the stuff we explored on this phone call. And I'm also going to have an updated ebook that everybody who comes out to the course is going to get for free. So if you're in LA or you're in New York and you want to come out to a really positive environment full of great people and great instruction, then definitely go to my website and read about the course. Definitely sign up for the course. Get out to that course and benefit from all the information. It's going to be extremely informative. There's no fluff ever at any of my events. And I think that's it for me.
actually, for the people that are on the call and ones that will be hearing this on the replay, there's a big button on the page that says Collision Course DVD. You can click that and go right to the page.
So. Yeah, exactly. That's where you want to look into the Collision Course exactly. Just check out that page, click on Collision Course, see if it's a good fit for you. And I also have some articles on hormone optimization on my website. I have one article called My Journey in and Out of Andropause, where I talk about how I went from basically the stress-induced environment of non-optimal hormones to where I'm at now, where I just feel great and empowered and excited about stuff each day and just ready to take charge of stuff. And also my book, Live Life Aggressively, What Self-Help Gurus Don't Want You to Know, it's basically a book that's a revolt against a lot of the garbage that's out there. Stuff like you got to be positive all the time and fake it until you make it. Just stuff that's moronic. I'm just crushing all that stuff and then providing an alternative way of thinking. And it's not about, again, me being right and everyone being wrong. It's just about thought-provoking. I will address hormones to a degree in that book, but I will be saving the hormone optimization book for another time. Probably next year I'll start working on that in more detail. But what makes this book important is that it's a self-charge and take charge of your life book. It's about how to be brutally honest with yourself, take that inventory that we all should be taking, and how to move forward from there and start living a life that you want rather than just settling for where you're at.
That's going to be a good book. I'm excited for that one to come out.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the writing process. I'm hopefully this year, October, I'll have it done, but I may take a few more months to really do it right and push it out next year instead. But we'll see how that goes.
Will that be an ebook, or is that going to be a hard copy?
It's going to be a hard copy. I am going to self-publish it, but it will be a hard copy book. It'll be a physical book, not an ebook.
Okay, cool. Liz, actually, from St. Louis, says thanks for taking the time to answer her question. You gave her a lot of interesting things to think about.
Okay, great. You're welcome, Liz. And for those of you on the call, feel free to shoot me an email if you want me to expand on something a little bit more. I'll try to point you in the right direction. Or if you have questions about where to get the saliva test done, feel free to shoot me an email. Or if there's just some other stuff you want to discuss, you know, feel free to shoot me an email and I'll see what I can do.
Awesome, Mike. I appreciate you taking the time for the call.
Thanks a lot, Ryan. I enjoyed it. I really appreciate you doing this.
No problem. And I'll get you that replay here shortly, as soon as they download something for you. But that's all. That's all, folks. Thanks for joining in on the call with me and Mike. I appreciate you guys showing up.
Thanks a lot, Ryan. Appreciate it.
See you later, Mike.
Take care.